interesting to see you guys, or at least to see your names, whichever one it is. B'shem Hashem Nasa v'natzliach, Baruch Shachiyanu v'kiyimanu v'igenu l'zman hazeh. I really, really waited a long time to do something like this. I never got organized properly. Thank God my son helped me with a lot of the stuff, with the content and also the presentation. So I actually made sure that I'm recording it. So yeah, I think I'm recording it. So we're going to start the life and times of Rabbi Nachman. Just to say one thing beforehand, to give a little destination. Our goal here is to really understand the chiddush of Rabbi Nachman. Rabbi Nachman came into this world, as we're going to learn about inside in a minute, to give the world a chiddush, to bring something new to this world, something from that was new from the Baal Shem Tov, a chiddush to the world. What is the chiddush of the world that Rabbi Nachman brought in? And Rabbi Nachman was not just another Hasidic Rebbe. They were really, really great Rebbes and really great thinkers and really great people who wrote unbelievable Torah, the Sfas Emes, and loads and loads and loads of Rebbes. Rabbi Nachman was a chiddush. And I'm sure every chassid will say that the Rebbe is a chiddush, but I think that Rabbi Nachman said himself that he's a chiddush. And just to start off on a little of a disclaimer, to think that actually in a few sessions we're going to get to the chiddush of Rabbi Nachman, I just want to make it very clear from the very beginning in Torah Nun Bet and Tinyana. Rabbi Nachman says, "Mashe kasha kushas al tzadikim." That which they ask, kushas al tzadikim, zeu muchoch liyot ki tzadikim nizdamim liyotzram. It has to be that we're asking kushas al tzadikim. Meaning, we want every tzadik to be like the Chafetz Chaim, and there's no kushas on them, and everything fits in, and everything makes sense, and everything that they said fits into the narrative of a tzadik, of a great person. Let's take a person like Rabbi Ari Levine. Everything about Rabbi Levine just screamed tzadik, tzadik, tzadik. There's no weird stories. But Rabbi Nachman, who's the tzadik ha-emes, there's a lot of things that's going to be hard to fit in to our narrative of the tzaddik. He says, but that which you ask kashas on the tzaddik, it's just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'kama shekasha kushas al Hashem Yisbarach. As many kashas as you have on Hashem, k'mo kem behechav shekasha kushas al tzaddik. Just like you have kashas on Hashem, you have difficulties on Hashem. We don't know why Hashem, why is Hashem saying this virus? Why is Hashem saying the Holocaust? We have kashas on Hashem, so too we're going to have kashas on the tzaddik. And that is Rabbi Nachman. Rabbi Nachman basically saying that if there's a God that you understand, he's not a God. So I'll take it one step further or lower, whichever you want to feel comfortable with. If you don't have kashas on the tzaddik, if everything makes sense according in the tzaddik, he's not the tzaddik emes. Because the tzaddik emes is not going to fit our mold. Rabbi Nachman did not fit our mold. People would like to paint a picture of Breslov and Rabbi Nachman fitting our mold. But anybody who learned Rabbi Nachman and Rabbi Nassim to a certain extent also, they don't fit the mold. They refuse to fit the mold. So that's Rabbi Nachman. And to say that we're going to get the chiddush of Rabbi Nachman in a nice package, like a nice, slick, halacha shir, like that and this fits into that, and this is not going to be like that way. The chiddush of Rabbi Nachman, even after we could sit for years and years and years, and we're not going to get the chiddush of Rabbi Nachman. But b'shem Hashem nasa v'natzliach, let's try and let's start going through Rabbi Nachman's life. The reason why Rabbi Nachman's life is so important is because Rabbi Nachman, he was a historical rebbe, meaning like this. Let's take the Marsha, which obviously Marsha was a giant. And Rabbi Nachman himself has stories about the Kever Marsha, and the Baal Shem Tov talks about the Kever Marsha, which is around 5 hours from Medjibaj. The Marsha, he could have wrote on the Perush of the Gemara last year, 1,000 years ago, 500 years, 200 years ago. He wasn't connected to the history of the times. He was giving a Perush in the Gemara. Rabbi Nachman, and many other Rebbes for that matter also, everything going around him, everything that was going in the historical world, I'm not just talking about the little Jewish world and not as little shtetl, everything going on in the world, as we'll talk about 1776, the American Revolution, that is speaking to Rabbi Nachman, and Rabbi Nachman is gathering all the information of the world because he's the neshama klalis, he is the neshama that's going to gather in the entire world, and he is going to bring his Torah based on what's going around him. And that's why Rabbi Nachman didn't, although he had set times in terms of the year when he had Torah, but most of the Torahs was like in the middle of when no one knew it was coming, they're going, as Rav Weinberger says, he gave that look. and everybody on the wagon, and everybody knew when he gave that look, oh, a big Torah is going to come out now. And everybody looked at Rabbi Nachman, we're going to get Torah from the Rebbe. The Rebbe's Torah is I wasn't able to learn Likutei Moran for many, many years. It was just a closed book for me, as for many people, a totally, totally closed book. It was until Rav Gerzi Shlita, he told me, he said, you have to look at it as Rabbi Nachman's own spiritual journal. And he's coming from an emotional from his son dying, from him getting a fight with somebody, from somebody putting him down, from this, from that. Everything that was gone in Rabbi Nachman's life, that's what he gave Torah on. And the Torah went from the lowest base of emotion to the highest spheres in the world, as opposed to, let's say, Rav Kook. Rav Kook was the other way around. Rav Kook was giving this lofty idea, and he was trying to bring it down to the world. Rabbi Nachman was taking a simple idea, a simple happening in the world, and bringing it up to the loftiest place. So all of a sudden, Napoleon becomes like this lofty, lofty idea. So we're going to start with the first of the series is going to be... we're going to talk about what was going on in history in the times that Rabbi Nachman was born in the world. Again, if the Tzadik HaEmes is the Neshama HaKlalis, and he's taking everything around him, if we don't understand what was going on during the times of Rabbi Nachman, we can't fully understand Rabbi Nachman. So there's not going to be a history course. That's not our destination. If you wanted a history course, Ravaria Kaplan from Russell Research Institute has a great book. He has also a great book they put in Hebrew. This history, and it's not pure Torah. We're putting the history and the Torah together, seeing where Rabbi Nachman was coming from. So here we go. I'm going to share the screen right now. I hope this works well. And we're going to go through some sources. We're going to go through what was going on in the year 1772. And again, like I said, you know, there's this. Let me start with one story before we really start with the material. In Alam Lechufa, Yitzchak, the son of Rabbi Nassan, writes to Rabbi Nassan and says, I think I have a beautiful pshat in the story of the first of the Sephora Mises of Avedas Bas Melech. It's all about the Chayta Egel. The Jews mess it up, and then we try to get back together. We have to find the king again. And he had a beautiful, beautiful pshat, and it really made sense. And Rabbi Nassan says, that's very beautiful. That's very, very beautiful. This idea that you're saying is very beautiful. It fits into the Chet Egel. But if you think, and here comes the kicker from Rabbi Nassim. He says, here's the punk rocker Rabbi Nassim coming in. If you think that it's only about Chet Egel, you have no idea who Rabbi Nachman is. Rabbi Nachman was talking about everything. Every Torah was everything. Every Sipur Maestros wasn't one instance in the Torah. It was everything. So Rabbi Nachman is Hakol. Rabbi Nachman is Hakol, and therefore we have to look what was going on in the world during the times that he comes. And I hope that we see a connection between what was going on in the world and where Rabbi Nachman was coming from. And again, the main words for these series, for the life and times of Rabbi Nachman, is #Chiddush. #Chiddush. So let's try to look. Shem should help me find the right screen. Ah, does it work, guys? Everything good? Good. You guys see the screen? Beautiful.
That's okay. Great.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for the support. I appreciate it. I needed that. Chaim Oran Reish Ayin Tav. The Reish Ayin Tav. Shamati b'shmo. Sha'amar min Rabbi Shimba Yuchai Shaya Chiddush. Okay. Again, Rabbi Nachman loves using the word Chiddush. He loves looking for something new in the world. Rabbi Shimba Yuchai was a Chiddush. Meaning from Moshe Rabbeinu to Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, came before some of Olam Shoket Adari. And then after Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, the world was Shoket. And that's like the anti-Rabbi Nachman, Shoket. The world was still Ad Ha'ari. Now, you had great people in there, but for some reason, the Ari, Zichron Levracha, Ainu Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, Ad Ha'ari, Zichron Levracha, Lo Niskal Chadashos, Kamo Shinizgol Ha'idei Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, Ad Sheba Ha'ari, Zichron Levracha, Shayach Chiddush, came before some. The Ari was a Chiddush, and he brought something down to the world. We're not talking about what right now. We'll go into that hopefully as we go on. From the times of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai to the Ari, the world was quiet with Chiddushim, and the Ari was Mechadish. Umin Ari, Zichron Levracha, Ad Baal Shem Tov, right? The Arizal is the 16th century. Now we're going into approximately the 18th century. Ada Baal Shem Tov Zichron Levracha Ya Gamkin Olam Shakek Bilo Chiddush Adje Baal Shem Tov Zichron Levracha Shei Chiddush Nifla V'Gila Chadoshos. And then the Baal Shem Tov releases Chadoshos in the world that from the time of the Arizal wasn't there, and the Baal Shem Tov Zichron Levracha Ad Ata until now. Now, this wasn't such a long time between the Baal Shem Tov died, you know, within 20 years of Rabbi Nachman being brought in the world. So it's a very, very short time. So we're not exactly sure what Rabbi Nachman was talking about, that the world was shaked between the Baal Shem Tov and Rabbi Nachman. Rabbi Nachman is the great grandson of the Baal Shem Tov, as we're going to get to. But he looked at the world as shaked. The world is running on the galus, the revelation of the Baal Shem Tov. Until I came. And this is why we're learning about Rabbi Nachman. That's so fascinating. Who else in the world can say, until I came? And I will start giving chadoshos niflos, wondrous chadoshos. So we could spend a lot of time on this, but let us go through the life of Rabbi Nachman, and we'll finish Bezor Hashem at the end of the series when three people are left. So we'll look at this and we'll understand what exactly was the chiddush of Rabbi Nachman. What was he talking about here? But in any event, Rabbi Nachman is looking for chiddushim and he's looking at the five tzaddikim beforehand. It's Moshe Rabbeinu, which he doesn't mention here, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, the Arizal, the Baal Shem Tov, and him. Let's see the next. Another idea of chiddush. Pamachas Yashav Yachad Amar Avakodesh Magen Tervitzia. Kemeduma Shaybesuda. The Magen Tervitzia was a great gaon in the Chassidish world in Ukraine. He was older than Rabbi Nachman, became almost like a chassid of Rabbi Nachman. He was sitting in Susuda Shlishis V'Tafas B'Zikno Shalamag. For some reason, all of Rabbi Nachman's stories is V'Tafas B'Zikno. He was always holding somebody's beard. B'derechiva, but in a loving way, you can imagine, in a zaydi way, he's holding his beard. But Rabbi Nachman was a young guy at that time. He wasn't so old. They've never seen a chiddush like me in the world. We don't understand what he's talking about. The world hasn't seen a chiddush like me. Yeah, I'm just going through some of the sources. And now we could probably see what Rabbi Nachman maybe is talking about from a prophecy of Yeshaya Navi. Yeshaya Navi says, he has a prophecy. Skip to Pasuk Gimel. We all know this pasuk, and it's actually quoted in Likutei Maran Torah Pei in the first chelik. And the Targum Yonason says, what does it mean? We will draw water from the Mine Yeshua. We will receive the ulpan, the teachings. Chadat is the new teachings, bechedva, with great simcha, mebechiri tzadikaya, from the bechiri tzadikaya. And that's how you know, and that's what Rabbi Nachman says in the Akdama to Likutei Maran, which was written much later when he was getting to Uman. He says that we had ir v'kadosh v'shamay v'nachis, and now we have the Nachman Oveh Mikor Chachma. Rabbi Nachman viewed himself as this chiddush that's coming down to bring the world ad bias HaMashiach. The Chiddush Ad Bias HaMashiach. That's what Rabbi Nachman was. Okay, everybody, good to now. Usually I like to have much more interactive, but me and Rav Judah are in the same base measures here. Usually I like to make it a little more interactive, but I want to get through the material. The information, and then we'll speak about it. So right now we have this idea of chiddush. We don't know exactly what Rabbi Nachman, the chiddush of Rabbi Nachman is. You could say it's pnimiyas haTorah, but what the Ramchal is pnimiyas haTorah, no chiddush. What exactly is he talking about? The Rishon Baruch Chai, the Arizal, the Baal Shem Tov. What was he talking about, the chiddush? So let's start right now. What I'm going to do now is a risky thing, and everything I said, it could be I'm wrong, could be I'm dead wrong, but. With Rabbi Nachman, you have a very wide target to hit that you're right, but you'll never hit on the target. That's going to be very, very hard to hit on the target. You're not going to get, but he has a wide target to get. It's hard to be wrong, but it's impossible to be right. That I think Rabbi Nachman. So take it or leave it. I'm trying here, and you'll tell me if you guys agree or not agree, what you guys think. I'd love to hear your thoughts. Let's look at the world when Rabbi Nachman comes into the world. Rabbi Nachman comes into the world. Everybody see the screen now? Yeah? Okay. Rabbi Nachman comes in the world, 1772. That's when he's born. By the way, we're not even sure about exactly the year he was born. There's a whole machlokas about which year he's born. You know, one of the few people in the world that has a machlokas about which year he's born on. But the accepted opinion is 1772. Now, the world is going unbelievable changes in the world, 1772. Lav dafka that year per se, but in general, 1772. You have a picture in front of you. It looks a little bit like Uman, at least today. But this is the Industrial Revolution. The Industrial Revolution is starting up, and it's moving really quick towards the 19th century, going from the 18th century to the 19th century, changing the way of the world. Things were much quicker. Things were much faster. Productivity was moving. The world was developing. The world was moving from the old world. Now, did Rabbi Nachman have anything to do with industry? Was he had anything to do with cotton making or flax making? No. But the fact that you have a person in the world moving the world forward to the Chiddush, I believe that this is he's in the movement of the world of the Industrial Revolution. The Choladeus, if you listen to anybody speaking about history, you have this idea that they say that I don't know who said this, that this was the revolution, and ever since then everything is just evolution. Now that's exactly what Rabbi Nachman is gonna say when Rabbi Nachman says I didn't have this quote here, but he says that. It's a pretty wild thing that he says this, and this is why I love Rabbi Nachman so much. He says that until the Mashiach comes, I will be mechadish everything that's needed until the Mashiach comes. When the Mashiach comes, they're just going to teach my teachings, and everyone just accept it because it's the Mashiach and not Rabbi Nachman. But I have brought everything into the world. Ad bias a Mashiach, eishali tukar alam. Ad bias a Mashiach. Everybody knows the eishali. It's on every bumper sticker. So therefore, the Industrial Revolution, everything since the Industrial Revolution that we're living through is just an evolution of the revolution. So Sotei Rabbi Nachman, everything is just an evolution. All the Torah HaPnimis is just an evolution of Rabbi Nachman. Just one short thing from the Likutei Halachos. He was talking about the press, the printing press. Now, the printing press, just to be fair, the printing press was written in, it was made in 1450 by Guttenmacher. So it's not fair to say that that was part of the Industrial Revolution, but if you're sure that the printing press was reaching its heights during the times of Rabbi Nachman. Just one little idea. This is not part of the major thing, but Rabbi Nachman says that when he talks about the Tfus, the Beit HaTfus, he says that it's kibbutz nefashos. I'm reading the underline. The scribes, the way the scribes did it, they would read one letter and one letter. They could do many at one time. For them, that was a big chiddush, that the one person working with cotton could do eight times the amount of the work after the Industrial Revolution. All the kibbutz osios that you can do again and again and again, all these letters are living in lekutei nefashos. Okay, the idea is not to go into this Torah right now, but the point is that the world is moving, and Rabbi Nachman's moving. Or I should say, Rabbi Nachman's moving and the world's moving. And I'm not sure which is, they're both right. They're both right. Rabbi Nachman was moving with the world, and the world was moving with Rabbi Nachman. Next up, we have anybody can guess what this is? This is the French Revolution. French Revolution. Why is the French Revolution important, and how does that fit into Rabbi Nachman's life? So I'm not a historian, Bichlal. I looked up like Wikipedia, a few things, and watched like funny YouTube videos on this. So I can't, but if anybody's into history, you'll understand that the French Revolution was a major, major change into going from kings and serfs and a whole different way of governing than the French Revolution was moving towards, we'll say democracy for lack of better terms, but they're moving the world in a different part of leadership. And away from the old kingship, and away from the old church, and from the old ways of doing things. Again, chiddush in history. Can we say exactly how much Rabbi Nachman was involved with that? It's hard to say, but to say that Rabbi Nachman to say that Rabbi Nachman was not involved with it, then we're denying that he's connected to everything going on in the world. So yeah, you have the French Revolution, which is moving the world forward. We have Napoleon. We're not going to talk about Napoleon that much, but he's also moving the world. And in fact, he had the Hasidic world wrapped in a machlokas about Napoleon. You had the Balatani, who was so against Napoleon because he was going to enlighten the world, and he was putting Seder in the world, and he didn't want that. We were talking about with Matan before we started that Chabad, it's interesting how Lubavitch is like almost closed-minded, where Chabad is big-minded. This was like the Balatanya was we're talking about it in a kanoi, meaning he didn't want the world to go forward, and he didn't want the stability that Napoleon would bring. Whereas opposed to Menachem Mendel Rimanov, was pushing very, very hard for Napoleon because he believed that the world needed Seder, and all these Cossacks and all these barbarians and tribes have to stop, and Napoleon will make Seder. That was a big machlokes. We don't find Rabbi Nachman talk about this. Rabbi Nachman didn't get up on Shabbos and talk about politics and talk about different people. He didn't do that, but he was being affected by everything. Obviously, Napoleon was very affected when he got there. So, but that we'll talk about when we get there. So, next in 1772, if you look at the map here, we have the first partition of Russia, Prussia, and Austria, and Poland is gone. Poland is gone to come back much later in history. But Poland is gone. Why is that so important that Poland is gone? We'll say that Poland represents the church. The Poland represents the old ways. The Poland represents going back to the serfs and going back to the pogroms of the Cossacks fighting against the Poles. In 1772, the year that Rabbi Nachman's born, it's the first partition. It happens again in 1793, 1795. But that's the first partition where Poland is gone. And therefore, we're working with a new world order. Rabbi Nachman is looking at the world, but he's born into a world of a new world order, where it's not the Polish Empire anymore, where everybody right now is kind of, you don't see so much. We'll talk about this a little bit next time when we talk about the Jewish history, but we'll go back a little bit to the faces. We don't see the major pogroms during Rabbi Nachman's years, meaning 4 years of Rabbi Nachman's born, there was a major pogrom, the Heidemax in Uman, and Rabbi Nachman almost his whole life and where he's buried and everything is based on that pogrom, but that was before Rabbi Nachman's life. During Rabbi Nachman's life itself, until 1820, when Rabbi Nachman was already gone by 1820, then the czars come in and they start with the army and they start with giving tough time with the Jews. But during Rabbi Nachman's time, everybody was kind of like watching the world change. And, you know, like they're kind of like holding, like seeing what's going to be. And Rabbi Nachman had like this little Geshet Tsar Ma'od of quiet. Again, Rabbi Nachman had his tsars and everything like that. But Yachasi, relative to Chelmenitsky, which we had before, and the Heidemax and the Tsarist Russia, which is going to happen to be when Rabbi Nachman was just coming in, the Tsar was very good to the Jews. It stopped. But the point is, there's a new world order. Exactly what fit? Can I say that Rabbi Nachman talked about the new world order? Again, no. But was he affected by the new world order? Yes. Things are moving in the world. The Chiddush is moving in the world. Finally, I'm not sure how much this has to do with it, but of course, everything. When we're dealing with the Tzaddikei Emes, we're dealing with Hakol. And here we have 1776, George Washington, the American Revolution. Again, the beginning of democracy. Well, with this French Revolution, they're fighting England, and they're fighting England because England is going to fight America. And it all fits into this moving of the world to democracy. Now, again, was Rabbi Nachman this big liberal Democrat? No, by no sense of the word. But he was moving the world in a certain direction, and the world was moving in a certain direction. This is the groundwork where Rabbi Nachman was looking at the world. You know, some people say, I mentioned this before, to Laser Lord in the Blues, that that slavery was as hype when Rabbi Nachman was writing Likutei Maran. And the first piece of Likutei Maran, he said that I hear the tefillahs of these people, that they're crying so, so sincerely out to Hashem, and they have so much chen when they're davening. But the Jews lost the chen, and it went to the Goyim. Who knows? Again, who knows? I'm not saying this for sure, but who knows? Maybe he was thinking of the black slaves saying, freedom, we want freedom. Maybe he was hearing that cry for freedom, because that's what he was hearing in the world. Poland is gone, and there's freedom, and Russia's coming, and Prussia's coming, and Austria, and the whole new world. He's hearing this whole idea of Chiddush, and yes, so we said that he's saying the world was shaking from the Baal Shem Tov till him. And it's funny, like what happened between the Baal Shem Tov and him? But if you really look at 1772, yeah, there's a lot of chidushim in the world that the Baal Shem Tov wasn't seeing. The Baal Shem Tov was coming from the world of Chelmanitsky. He was coming from the world of Cossacks. He was coming from the world of, we'll get to next time, Machlokas with the Gra that the Magna Mezrich had to deal with. We'll talk about that next time. We'll get to Jewish history, about what Rabbi Nachman had to deal with in the context of Jewish history. But up till now, we see that there is a chiddush in the world, in world history. And I believe, again, exactly how this works out, I don't know. But I started out saying that if we don't have kashas on the tzaddik, then we're not understanding the tzaddik. If we understand exactly what the tzaddik was doing, then I have no idea what I'm talking about. But there must be some connection between the whole movement of the world and Rabbi Nachman. Bezor Hashem, next time we'll talk about what was going on in the Jewish world, the Chassidish world, the world of the Gra, the world of Moses Mendelssohn, and all this is also going to fit into the complexity of Rabbi Nachman. It's unbelievable that Rabbi Nachman is just filled of paradoxes. Always talking about Pashtus, but yet he's writing the most difficult sefer that ever was written, Likutei Maharan. And the more you embrace these complexities of Rabbi Nachman, the more you're holding on to Rabbi Nachman. We're going to make Rabbi Nachman into a simple leader who wrote Torah, as one of my mentors, Professor Schneider, says. Some of you guys know him. He said, if you read a piece of Likutei Maharan and you say, oh, you know, I saw this before in a different piece. I saw this in a Ramban al Torah. I saw this. Then you're not in, you didn't get the Likutei Maharan. And if you don't think that it's absurd what Rabbi Nachman's telling you, read it again because you didn't get it right. Rabbi Nachman is telling us a chiddush. This is not another sefer of Divrei Torah. It's a chiddush that's going to lead us into the world of Mashiach. So that's Ad Kan, part number one, Rabbi Nachman and the surroundings. If anybody has any comments, any questions, I'd love to hear from you guys.
Rabbi, I have a general question.
Yeah.
You were mentioning a lot of the sources where Rabbi Nachman talks very highly about himself. And to the untrained ear, it's a little jarring. Do you mind just elaborating a little bit about what that means?
I didn't even read the rated R ones. I did the common ones. When you're looking at Rabbi Nachman, you can't look at the lens of a normal human being like we see it. Like, oh yeah, you know, you don't talk like this about yourself. You know, who talks about this? Rabbi Nachman was, his guf wasn't even there. When Rabbi Nachman, right before he passed away, went to Lemberg, it was like 1838, and the doctor Gordon was a famous doctor that was taking care of his wife, and he also took care of Rabbi Nachman. He says, you know, that your Rebbe had such a perfect physical guf, which is the strangest thing in the world, tuberculosis. He was the weakest person in the world, Rabbi Nachman goes, but because of all of his fastings and all of this, he destroyed his guf. Rabbi Nachman wasn't guf, he transcended the world. And therefore, whenever he was talking about himself, he wasn't talking about Mr. Nachman, I don't know his last name, but Mr. Nachman from Bratislava. He wasn't talking about himself. When I talk about myself, I don't really know so much. I'm talking about me, the flesh of me, my brains, or this and this. Rabbi Nachman had no, we're not talking about from a place of flesh. And this, when he says, Ani nahar ha-mitahar mikol ha-ksamim, that I am the kol ha-ksamim, he wasn't talking about like the Rabbi Nachman, the person that we usually think. It's the neshama that Hashem put into this world. That kilu, there's no guf there. There's no guf. So when you look at that again, Rabbi Nachman's not going to fit into your everyday person putting his head down, saying, "Oh, you know, I'm not really nothing. I don't have much to bring to the world." Now he was looking at his neshama. He says, Hashem gave me a neshama to bring this chiddush to the world. And it's purely in the neshama. There's no goof. And therefore, you know. And he also said that you could take all the Amorim and Tanoim on one side. And now I'm giving you the rated R stuff. You could take all the Amorim and Tanoim on the one side and you put me on the other side. And my anivas outweighs all of them. Because it's a neshama. It's saying that the fact that I can talk like that, it just shows I have no goof. I'm not trying to get covered. I'm not trying to do this and this. I'm telling you about the neshama that Hashem brought into the world. I'm doing this for mankind. He said many times, if people just followed every step that I took and this, then there would be much, much better in the world. He just wanted the world better. It was a neshama. He always talks about Rachmanus. It was his Rachmanus that he talked about this in the world. Because if he didn't make it, and he was the chiddush of the world, oy vavoy on us, that we didn't get that message. So he made it very loud and clear. So it throws people off. Yeah, he also wanted to throw people off because those people are stuck in the goof. And they're like, oh, how can he speak like that? Okay, Mr. Rabbi Nachman. And Rabbi Nachman says, you know, Pass, go. Don't collect $200. Like, weiter. I'm not interested in you. I hope that helped.
Hey. No.
Yeah.
But if not, Rabbi Nachman is saying that he is the only source to find Torah and whatever he defines as Chiddush. I'm not saying, but he's not the only. He's saying you could. It's still meritorious to learn. I don't know if that's a word, meritorious, but yeah, it's still worthwhile to learn other Torah. Or is that not what he's saying?
Question.
Is that too controversial?
He had great respect for leaders like Rabbi Levi Yitzchak. He loved Rabbi Levi Yitzchak very much. He actually said if Levi Yitzchak made it to Uman, which he tried to make it to Uman, he would have been even greater, but he was stuck in Berditch if he wasn't so great, whatever that means. Tanya had great respect for. He called him Sari Elef, but he wasn't interested in the Torah of Balatanya. The Balatanya would teach him Torah for 8 hours, and he said, afterwards, are you finished? You know, like, I think that he, like, obviously he's machshav people, he's respecting people. But in the end of the day, if you want the chiddush of the world to bring Mashiach, you got to stick with my Torah. And naturally, it's the exclusion of other Torahs. You can't be holding with everything. People can argue against that. Take it or leave it. You know, that's what he was there for. Take it or leave it. If anybody else has any, if Judah, if you have any comments on that, that would be okay. I just got this. Okay. Any other comments, questions? Okay.
Where could I find sources on Rav Nachman's relationship with other, as you said, the Berditchever, Baal Tanya, and other contemporaries of his time? Where would I find that?
One thing amazing about Rabbi Nachman is that his life is so written out because of Rabbi Nachman. You have Chaim Moran, a lot in Chaim Moran. It's going to be there. He talks about his meeting with the Balatanya. I have a specific sefer called Masam Berditchev, which goes through all of the meetings with him and the Balatanya. I don't know exactly where he was getting his original sources from. It was Chabatsky who wrote it. They met two times in their lives. About Kedushas Levi, the famous thing that Levi Yitzchak passed away. Nobody knew in Breslov at that time he passed away, and he wrote the Torah on Shabbos Bereishis, and he talked about the Pe'er of Yisrael fell, and nobody knew exactly what he was talking about. When they found Levi Yitzchak died, they understood that he was talking about him. In terms of other rebbes at the time, we have to understand also one thing. This is going to be for next session, that all the rebbes are running away to Poland at this time. It's 1772, Magid of Mezra just passes away, and kind of Rabbi Nachman's on one end, and everybody's running towards Poland, South Poland. Well, that time it wasn't Poland. It maybe Austria at that time. Everybody's kind of running away to Galicia, and Rabbi Nachman's almost alone there with a few other people. We'll talk about them next time. But obviously the Shmuel Zaidi, he talks a lot about positive, negative, the people he met in Eretz Yisrael. But it's very, very complicated. Rabbi Nachman kind of was in his own world. Even with the Baal Shem Tov, it wasn't so clear. Obviously, he had great, tremendous respect for his great-grandfather. We'll talk about this also, but when he went to Medjugorje, his mother told him, why don't you go to, before he went to Eretz Yisrael, he said, why don't you go to the Baal Shem Tov before you go to Eretz Yisrael and to daven by his kever? He goes, no, let the Baal Shem Tov come to me. He wasn't there to be mechabit everybody and to make sure everybody's in peace and everybody's good and everybody's fine. That's one of the complexities of Rabbi Nachman. I'm not going to tell you that he was there to shower his, give 10-minute introductions for people. That's not who he was. But he does talk about the Maggid of Teravitzi. He speaks so highly about. Even his enemies, he spoke, the Shmuel Zaidi, he spoke very, very highly of. But it's splattered around in different places. There's no one place where you could find what Rabbi Nachman speak about people.